The following program is an MLWRadio.com production.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news, notes, reviews and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling here on the MLW Radio Network. I'm your host, Striga, and Dylan, the grind continues.
It continues, but the love continues too, and the passion of wrestling that we, as fans and as analysts and as listeners and as wrestlers even, we all come together to celebrate this G1. We all have the passion to watch 7 shows and however many days it's been, but the 4th of 4 shows in a row, and we'll have some days off going forward, and hopefully that will give the listeners time to listen to this show, in fact. So lots of good scheduling this year for G1 to give us some time off. But like you said, the grind is on. We're coming up on halfway through, not quite there yet. We're almost kind of sort of halfway there, as Big Time Rush once said. But until then, we have 2 great shows to talk about. And by 2 great shows, I mean possibly the best of the tournament and one of the worst of the tournament. two sides of every the same coin, pretty much.
Still, I thought the second one was still a decent show, but if you,
compare
it to others, it probably, it probably was the worst show so far. Before I want to get into the G1 Climax show, Dylan, I briefly want to talk about DDT, because prior to today's G1 Climax show, the DDT Summer Vacation show happened. I only saw the main event, but I was very happy to see that in the semi-main event, Mike Bailey and Mao won the KOD Open, the KOD Tag Team title from Tetsuya Endo and from Matt Pauly, because those guys are a great tag team, and especially Mao had been on fire in recent weeks. There was this 4-way match at one of the Maji Manji shows, I think 2 weeks ago, with Mao, Masashi Takeda, Katsuhara Higuchi, and a 4th guy I can't remember right now. And Mao was the absolute star of that match. He was totally crazy. It was, of course, Konosuke Takeshita. He was crazy as well. And Mao was the star of this match. He was in every way like Kota Ibushi would have been in these situations. And he really inherits the spirit of Kota Ibushi right now in DDT. And so they won the tag titles today. Very happy for them. And in the main event, we had Shigehiro Irie picking up his first ever victory in a singles competition against Harashima. And a lot of people were hyped for this match, and I was too. That's why I got up early today. And while I gotta say this match was good, I also have to say that I at no point felt emotionally invested in the match, and I just think that's because I'm so confused about this Shigehiro Irie character, because in my mind, everything Irie is doing right now in this run is very confusing. He acts like an asshole. He comes back once his shot, acts like an asshole during the match, then he wins the belt and he cries. Same with Harashima today. Before the match, he said how much he respects Harashima and so on. That's cool and fine. But it doesn't relate with the character he's portraying right now. In the match, after the match, he just cries and shakes Harashima's hand. And that's fine. If the storyline had been about Irie and Harashima, this would have worked. This would have totally worked out. But the way it was here, I can't really relate to it. How about you?
To me, when you said that, it all reminds me of one man, Odita. You mentioned the crying. You mentioned the nonsense, the things that don't really make any sense going on. That's what that sounds like when you describe it. I have to say, I really liked Irie's first two matches for the title against Higuchi and Ishii. And that's about as far as I can say on him. The character work, the storyline, really, his whole faction to me is a little kind of not really connecting.
They are not called to Renegade, apparently.
Ooh, yes. That's pretty badass.
It's badass.
Renegade. Yeah. But they really don't fit with him, I feel like. It's just kind of a weird thing going on. So the DDT storyline, I don't even know how to say it. I really think you described it well. Like you said, going back and forth between heel and crying and what we saw after his match with Harashima, I don't know. I don't even know what to say other than it just doesn't connect with me. But I think the difference between me and you is that I'm so jaded by DDT storylines that I just kind of sit back, watch the matches. I enjoyed his first two matches. And I did not see this one. I was so excited for this match that I tried and failed to sleep through it to make way for G1 time. But either way, no sleep for me, but I will watch this match and we'll try to see how this plays out for my own two eyes.
Yeah, well, I liked the Higuchi one as well, but much like with this match, I didn't really get into the match, even though they had a history with each other. I thought it was.
What about the Ishii match?
I didn't see the Ishii match yet.
I liked it.
Yeah, I must have. I went through DDT shows this past week, but I must have overseen the show.
It was a couple of months ago.
Okay. I want to read what Mort told me about this storyline, because he is very invested with the Irie storyline, and he says, I think his character is really relatable. He's a sweet boy, he's pretending to be angry and tough, but also very clearly signaling that he isn't, but he's just hurt emotionally. This is a description of this character. If I have to be this way to have success, so be it. I don't like being this way, but I'll act this way if it's what I need to do. And he said to the entire lead-up to the match, he talked nothing else how much he respects Harashima and thinks Harashima is great, and how much it'll mean to him to beat Harashima clean, and that's his big goal. And, of course, that's a fair point Mort makes, and you can see it this way, I think. But problem here is the match itself, it was never about Irie and Harashima. It was about the company and Irie. And also, in my opinion, this entire storyline that Mort described would have worked much better if Irie would just be himself. The true Shihiro Irie that we've seen fail so many times. And he is the sweet boy. But in this current story and this character he does, I didn't really feel anything when he beat Harashima. And that's sad. And when you look at the crowd number they did today, they did 1,026 fans. For this match, this should have done much better.
Mm-hmm. And it's a shame because, that, like you said, that storyline's been going on forever between him never beating Harashima, it feels like. So, I don't know what to say. I don't really think it's working that well right now, this Irie push. And really, when they took the title off Takeshita, I think a lot of people thought that Endo would really be the one to follow up on that.
We talked about it.
Yeah, exactly. But I think not just us. No. I don't think this was some wild idea that was exclusive to our show. I think a lot of fans thought that Endo would be the one to take it from him. And now this Irie thing, and I kind of half predicted this when Irie came back in his once you come back in the all black, it means you're getting a push in wrestling. That's a very tried and true wrestling trope. So I thought that could happen, and then they actually did it, and I was like, wow. But I think that maybe if this storyline had perhaps had a little better timing to it, I think maybe it could have come across better. But because it happened when it did, when you're in the middle of this Takeshita reign, I don't think it's come across well. And really, any kind of point, you mentioned the storyline with Harashima, that he should just be himself, not just this weird heel character, this stable. I just don't think any of it's really worked that well so far for him. And I don't know where you go from here, but Peter Pan's coming up.
Yep.
You know, so I think if they feel like it's time for a change, there's a very good opportunity to enact that change.
Well, of course, King of DDT is coming, and the winner of King of DDT is challenging Shigeyori Irie then. Yeah, let's see. Well, so much for DDT here. Let's switch gears and let's talk about the G1 Climax shows nights 6 and 7. We had the final night of G1 action in Kirken Hall on Saturday. 1,734 fans. We had Toriano getting a victory over Kota Ibushi first here. And I don't know, but I truly believe this is everything you hate about Toriano, right?
Hey, how did you know?
feels like I've heard these takes quite some time.
I know. Well, the first two matches I kind of enjoyed, which was a very, very rare thing for Toriano G1 matches. But here, we just had everything. We want to me, any match that involves duct tape, I can't. That's automatic. Like that to me is automatic way too far. There's no way I could like it. Duct tape belongs in somebody's house. You know what I mean? Like, if you're putting a picture up, maybe, that you don't need it. Or if it's me, there's bedroom play going on that we don't need to talk about. But if you have something like that, that's what duct tape's for. Duct tape is not for wrestling, okay? So anytime I see that, that's an automatic zero. that's an automatic dud on my star ratings. But I don't know. I don't know why we went back to this, because I thought they he's still doing Yano stuff in his other two matches, but they balanced it out enough to where I thought it was very tolerable and actually really enjoyable for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
Now we've just gone, apparently that didn't matter, much like every other story in this company right now. That just only lasted two shows. So I guess we're right back to where Yano did. Yano's doing his Yano thing, and the other times there was no payoff or point to it whatsoever, and we're just going to do the same bullcrap that we've seen for years and years, apparently.
I believe they will bounce back, because he's facing Hiroki Goto next, and I think, much like in the match he had with Tomohiro Ishii, he will try to behave against Goto. But yes, I can see your point here, that this one was, of course, the Toriano we saw years ago, but still with some elements of the quote-unquote new Toriano, but more of the old Toriano. And if they keep it this way, if they have him be the old Toriano for one or two matches in this tournament, that could be fine. But they shouldn't really bounce back to the ways he was before, because people were really, really digging his new character. The Zack Sabre match got a lot of good reviews. I still enjoyed this one because I am a big fan of Toriano nonetheless. So
that's where we're going to be at, because I think a lot of the people that really, really loved his first two matches already liked him. So I really feel like he's getting kind of, that buzz is a little overrated.
Yes,
because I think everyone who loved him already liked him.
No, yeah, he still got comments from, I think, people that didn't really like his shtick before, much like from you. You liked
his first two matches. Myself included, I did like them, but I think it got a little overblown, is all I'm saying. But more importantly, never mind that if it was overblown or not, do you agree with my point about the duct tape? That's super whack, right?
What kind of shenanigans do you do with duct tape in your house, Dylan?
We're not talking about that. that's a whole other scenario of podcast. All I'm talking about is that it doesn't belong here.
In a tournament where people get DQ'd, you can't use duct tape.
And yes, that is true. We've seen the DQ broken out. I guess that only occurs in A-block and bad luck falling matches, though.
No.
Oh yeah, that's right. I wanted to push that match, but let's save that. That's a whole other.
Yeah,
that should be saved for some sort of adult only show, because there are some views that should not be heard by many people, or matches that should be seen. But unfortunately, we had to watch them. But that said, what about the second match on the show?
Oh, the second match was great. I am looking at the matches here as we have the ratings. I only put it in today, this morning actually, when the G1 show started, so we don't have that many ratings yet. We have it at 7.76 with 9.0 ratings, and right now it is below Naito and Robinson and also below Ishii and Goto, but actually I would put it in between those two matches. I think this was the second best match of the show because it was a phenomenal wrestling match. And Zanada made a great point after the match in his backstage comments, saying that pro wrestling is much more than dropping people on their heads, and they proved it here. And very funny is that we talked about Zanada's wrestling looking too crisp, and then he had this match with Zack Sabre Jr. here, and we said that it's much up to Zack when he because he moves so great inside the ring, and he did here as well. And I think he was a very huge part of this match being so great, but Zanada was as well, because they traded holds, and it was very much a mirror match, because both guys went for similar moves, and Zanada was just the one coming out on top with a cradle that caught Zack Sabre off guard.
Yeah, I thought this was even better than their New Japan Cup match.
And yes.
Really, and I thought the pacing of it was phenomenal in this match. Another really quick match. We made this point about another match on the last episode, but I think this was around 10 or 11 minutes from these two.
Yeah, we made the point about Evil and Maccabi.
Yeah, and this match, it really befit both of their styles here, because it showed that Sonata... I've really been impressed with Sonata in his first three matches. I think, especially the Goto match and this match, I think he's really shown a lot. And we saw this match here, he mentioned it, and you mentioned it about wrestling being more than head drops. I thought the crowd was really invested in this match, you know, even just over holds and things like that. And takedowns and very simple things. I thought both men really worked this match to, I won't say perfection, but to a truly sublime manner here. I really loved what both men brought to the table. Sonata's having a great cup so far. I've always been a little cold on him, but I think between the Goto match and this match, I mean, those are two of the best wrestlers in the company, but still, he has more than held his own both ways. And I thought this match especially, I thought he was every bit as good as Zack in this match. And both men are just on their way to having great, great tournaments in this B block. And I think that's really the story of the B block. You'll get your Yano match with a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. You'll get your Tonga match with no fun. But you will get three awesome matches. It's guaranteed. Like, the top eight of B block are just killing it right now. And I wouldn't even list Sonata before the tournament as one of those top workers. But to me, he's right up there with anybody. And this match just showed it again. Loved everything about this match, Strig. I thought it was absolutely great. And I agree, it was my second favorite match, too.
It was great. It was definitely great. And I saw a tweet earlier today saying that this comment by Zanada might be a subtle shoot on Tetsuya Naito. Because Tetsuya Naito, of course, he drops people on his head with the Destino. And he did so with Juice Robinson. Tetsuya Naito going up to 4 and Juice Robinson being 0-3 in his G1, in his second G1 now. The match is rated 8.94 and it was based around Juice Robinson's arm injury. And while I gotta say, they exploited it very well, and Naito looked like a total dick during this match, and Juice Robinson had fiery baby comebacks but was unsuccessful in the end. I gotta say, this now feels a lot like Juice Robinson's last G1 run. Just instead of a leg injury, he now has a hand injury.
Yeah, and it's just like I mentioned the last time, I think it really hurts because he uses his hand so much with all of his moves that it just kind of draws attention to that this is a BS injury. That's kind of how I feel like through these matches. And again, I thought here, Juice always, tremendous performer when it comes to being a babyface for the crowd. I think that's great. I think Naito has had a really good tournament as well, too. I'm not going to discredit him, but I kind of with you, because I can kind of tell where you're coming from here. I have a feeling this was the one that you put below Zack and Sonata.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I have to agree. Actually, I think the cage match users, they sort of switched the numbers from the Sonata-Zack
well,
in this match.
As I mentioned, we got much more ratings for Naito and Robinson, and that still might turn out the other way around when more people rate the Zack Sonata match.
I think that Naito has so many fans that all of his matches will get high ratings in this tournament.
16 votes for Zanada and Zack Sabre right now, and 69 for Naito and Robinson.
Hey, listen, I really like this match. I mean, if this match took place on an A block show, it'd probably be the best match of all of the A block matches. You know,
yeah.
So I still really liked it. I liked what they did, but I'm with you, and we brought this up again. This was something I brought up last time, that the hand injury, we're both not really fans of it, and we think, wouldn't it be something, Striga, wouldn't it be an amazing coincidence in wrestling if he loses that cast at some points and then suddenly starts winning his matches?
They actually brought it up on the English commentary, and shout out to Chris Charlton, who did commentary for the
English side.
Yeah, he was good on commentary, and he also was there to promote his new book, Eggshells, the history of the Tokyo Dome shows. We mentioned it here on this show as well. So shout out to him here. And they mentioned on what was my point? Actually,
they were talking about commentary.
Were talking about on commentary Juice injury. They mentioned in commentary that he was given the healing time of 4 to 6 weeks, and we're in week 5 now. So at some point in storyline, he will drop the cast.
I will say this. This is two grand points, not really having to do with the match, just these characters. I think a lot of the storylines are really falling flat in this tournament right now for me. But the one I really like is the Naito and Sonata storyline. Like you said,
it's very subtle.
And it's subtle, and it has a clear point to it. Like, we know that these two are going to be fighting near the end of the tournament in probably a really big match. They've built it up really well. They have these little shots and the not fist bumping or anything like that, you know, in some of their tag matches earlier on. I think it's a really great feud and something that I think is going to make Sonata, especially if Sonata keeps going at this pace he's going, I think this is successfully going to elevate him. And I wouldn't be surprised if he himself has really turned up the heat in his performances, because he knows that this is a big deal for him and a big moment for him to face Naito in the match.
Liked this too. And what I didn't like so much was Kenny Omega and Tama Tonga.
Before we get to that, because that is a whole other can of worms we're going to open, I want to make my point about Juice.
Okay.
I don't like Juice going 0-3 when
he's a champion.
He just won the title. Not just that he's a champion, which is true, but he just won the title from Jay White, who went 3-0.
Yeah.
So why are we seeing guys lose up again this year? Like, if it feels like, I don't like that at all. I just think that's such a tired trope that they've really brought out this year for some reason, and I don't like it here. Again, like you said, just kind of the same as last year. And I think Juice is someone that had a ton of momentum coming into this tournament, and I kind of feel like he's cooling off a bit, especially this B block where there's so much competition. I just feel like he's losing.
So weird with him going 0-3. He pretty much has to win his next match. His next match is against Kenny Omega. He has to win.
Let's talk about Omega. The
or
match
is
he has to win.
Next match with Kenny Omega. Yes, it is. It is. next match, Kenny Omega. So, for Tama Tonga's first two matches, I said that I enjoyed them for what they were. And this one was the one that I was the most hyped up about, because it, of course, is the direct confrontation between Bullet Club Elite and the so-called Bullet Club Originals, or the Firing Squad, as they are called. But this was not good at all. And the reason why it wasn't good at all, I made the point that Tama Tonga is working a very slow-paced approach to his matches, and that's fine. And I liked it because it was a change of pace from the regular G1 matches. And also, I thought he brought some nice spots and some nice moves into his wrestling. But here, the talking. I think we saw here why Tama Tonga is not in a leading position in the Bullet Club. He looks great when he's dressed up and all, with his great hair and with sunglasses. He looks great. But as soon as he gets to a promo or as he starts talking, it's just, it's over, you know?
Yeah.
He's not a talking guy. And he talked way too much in this match. Way, way too much. And I don't think anyone really cared or even was able to get what he was talking about, because you still gotta say that he was talking to a Japanese audience. Mm-hmm. And we got the run-ins. What I liked about the run-ins is that for the first time here, that actually someone stood up to the Tongans with Kota Ibushi, Chase Owens, and Hangman Page. On the other hand, again, it's so soon that Hangman Page is now in the cavalry for Kenny Omega.
Yeah, it's almost like that whole 4 or 5 month story didn't even matter.
Yeah. It's crazy. And then Red Shoes Uno gets gun stunned, and someone calls for the DQ. I'm not sure who did. Maybe he was still able to tell the ring announcer that he DQ'd him? I'm not sure.
I don't know, but I wish whoever that was watching all these other matches with Switchblade and Yano and
maybe,
these guys.
Maybe now, for the Tongans, we got the video assistant referee.
Video replay?
Yeah.
now in New Japan? Yeah. That would be interesting if that was the explanation. But I loved when you said the one reason that this match was not good. I was thinking there's so many that you can point to. I mean, if Tonga wants to point the finger for this disaster he just had on this show, he's going to need both hands, you know? I feel like, because I thought this was even worse than the first two matches somehow. Like, this lowered the bar. You're completely right on Tonga with his talking ability. And it's funny because if you listen to him just talk, he's kind of comes across before as more of a cool guy, sort of.
Yeah.
But now he does this weird rambling monologue bullcrap promo style that he has. If you want to even call it promo style, I don't know what to call it. But it wasn't good. Whatever it was, you totally right that it's in front of a Japanese crowd. But I understood it, and I wished I was Japanese because it was just taking me out of this match. That was already bad, if we're being honest. And I think you made a great point that this is the one you were hyped up about as a Tama Tonga fan, Striga. So someone that you defended the last show. And I think this really was his biggest match, you know?
Mm-hmm.
This was the match that it all came down to, that really I think many people thought that his whole inclusion in this tournament was really built around this match.
Yeah, and getting a victory over Kenny Omega.
And that didn't happen. So it makes one wonder, why couldn't we have Finlay in this tournament if this is what we're going to do? Why couldn't we have Finlay? Somebody who has a great repertoire, somebody who has wrestled great against Juice, showed a lot of potential, someone that is popular and is really building up. Instead, we get this Tama Tonga Fiery Squad crap that I just cannot stand. I hate all of this Bullet Club storyline right now. I cannot fathom why. The only thing I can think of, but the DQ kind of makes it, kind of opens the door for some kind of, you know, retaliation or some sort of rematch. Why not just give him the win?
Yeah,
I feel like, you know?
That's a good question here.
Because to me, him losing makes this whole thing just worthless.
Thing is, even more.
Worthless.
I'm still willing to give New Japan the benefit of the doubt because there has to be some thinking behind the storyline. And the thing is, the Tongans are clearly out to destroy anyone's enjoyment of their matches and to destroy anyone's enjoyment of the tournament itself, and they are even out to maybe hurt some of their opponents. And Dylan, I don't want to make this only about Tama Tonga, I want to make this about Kenny Omega as well.
Okay.
Because when he was on the apron, Tangaloa came back sneaking back after he was thrown out, and he hit Kenny Omega with a steel chair onto the knee, and it didn't even matter to Kenny Omega.
No. I feel like I've rubbed off on you the more we've done this podcast, because Omega, just like I just said, cartoon pro wrestler is kind of how his style is. And
did you listen to his backstage promo?
No, I don't. I don't like his promos at all.
Do you wanna hear what he said?
Sure.
He blamed Tama Tonga for hurting his average star rating.
As I see that. That totally sucks. Like, I hate that. I hate that about him.
Like, man, he's so over the top. I get it, what he's trying to accomplish, and it's funny in some ways, but it's so way, way over the top.
To me, and I don't think it works in the grand scheme of things. Like, if you look at his run, and I really bring it back to his main event versus Okada. Yes, he got the 6-star ratings and all of that. But if you look at his show where he main evented compared to the next year's show where Naito main evented the Tokyo Dome, where there was a real story and something that everyone could relate to, redemption and all of that, obviously it didn't work out how we all thought it would. But to me, if you compare 28,000 to 44,000 in like two different main events, what does that, I want to have a 5-star match, that storyline doesn't do anything for anybody outside of him and his friends, pretty much, I feel like. So I've never been a fan of that, and I think there's a reason that, because I remember when after he won the title, you said that show in San Francisco would sell a lot of tickets.
Yeah.
When now that he's got the title, and I think there's a reason why that show was 40% empty by the end of it. You know.
Yeah. There of course were other reasons as well, but yeah.
There are other reasons for sure, but that was one of them. I think Omega. I don't know, but I think he thinks that this is great. I think he thinks the storyline is like Shakespearean quality that he's got in his mind. But I don't see it that way at all, and I'm not into this at all, and I definitely was not into this match whatsoever, and I'm dreading the more Tama Tonga matches
we have. So there definitely has to be some kind of development by the end of this tournament. Unless we don't get that, it is what it is.
Do you think it's possible that they had this plan in mind, but because this really isn't working, this Fire Squad thing,
you know,
they decided
still not sure if this isn't working. I want to make another point. I was just browsing through the ratings here on Cage Match as we talked about star ratings, and I see a lot of people actually giving this match 3 stars, 3.25, 3.5. So apparently, for some people, it is working. And yeah, we might as well talk about the Fale and Evil match from today here, because it was very similar. We also got the run-ins from Los Ingobernables for the first time, actually, before something happened. So LIJ were very smart about this. And the people, we had 4,000 people in Hachioji today, and they were so loud, and this really is the most consistent reaction that the Tongans ever had in their careers. So I'm still unsure whether this is not working. I'm leaning towards that maybe it has a longer effect for the Tongans, but I'm still unsure.
To me, the ratings, you can't even count that at all, because the Omega fans are the ones driving those ratings. Like, they're not.
I don't know.
That's not a biased rating at all, that's not an unbiased rating at all. You cannot take Kenny Omega's fan base, which are very passionate, no doubt.
How am I supposed to know if they are Kenny Omega fans? I'm just reading people's ratings here. I can't tell.
Because that's who's giving these ratings. Like, you know, it's not.
Doesn't
like
make any sense, Dylan. No.
That you're saying that it doesn't make any sense that Kenny Omega fans, who are very invested, that buy all of his shirts and watch Being the Elite, all of those fans that have
more
subscribers of New Japan World that don't overrate his matches,
I can't say that these people are Kenny Omega fans just from reading their rating of one match. That's what I'm saying.
But anybody, like, no, I don't feel like you can objectively rate this as anything good, quality-wise.
Well, we are clearly talking about our opinions, and other people have different opinions and see things differently. So,
but if this were somebody else, what would be a match on Extreme Rules that would get this rating?
Because I haven't seen Extreme Rules. I don't know.
There were a ton of really bad matches that were just like this one on the show. So to me, if you bring up those ratings, I have a feeling that not many as many people rated those matches higher than this one.
But that's not the point. It's not the point I was trying to make. The point I was trying to make is that for some people this is working. And that's the people that are
Yes, you're Mega fans and Bullet Club fans.
And that's fine too, but that was part of my point that I was saying, and I just can't say that these are strictly Kenny Omega fans that are writing these comments.
Bullet Club fans in general, I think the Bullet Club, the brand name has so much weight right now among online fans and in wrestling in general, not just online fans. I think that name and that brand has so much weight to it that you're not going to get people burying Kenny Omega matches, no matter what it is. I feel like those kind of fans would never dislike any of his matches, and I'm not saying that it's a negative or positive thing that they enjoy Kenny Omega and his matches, but I'm just saying it is what it is.
The point in general is it's working for some people, and with the Fale match, very similar. Again, they were trying to ruin everything for everybody in this match. The people hated it, and that's how it in storyline is supposed to be. Up until that point in the evil match, we will, of course, talk about this main event from this show here, but I was just talking about the match. Up until the point, Fale and Evil had a good match, in my opinion. Like in many of those cases, the matches were good. Fale was working like a big heel that he's supposed to be. He was burying Evil under these guarding rails, and they had a great countout spot. And I hadn't mind if they had just gone with the countout here, because it was so believable that Fale just buried Evil underneath the guardrails.
Yeah, I could see that. I really wasn't into this match at all. I thought it was pretty bad, actually, I have to say. But that just made me, much like the Bullet Club fans may love Kenny Omega, I may be preconditioned already to dislike these firing squad matches, because I've seen the same thing happen so many times.
Yeah, and that's the problem of it.
Yes, there's this stat going around online that, and I think right now it has to be even more, there has to be 15 out of 35 matches that have had some form of ref bump, interference, countout, or not countout, but some sort of nonsense that I talked about in the last episode.
Yeah, but the thing is, what do you qualify as nonsense? Of course you can say that the nonsense a ref bump doesn't have to be nonsense, because it can add to a match.
A run-in, interference, ref bump.
That is something totally different. But a ref bump on its own is not automatically nonsense.
I would say it is. Like, I mean, that's something that shouldn't be allowed. I feel like if it were anything believable about any of this. But really, it's never really just the ref bump outside of maybe a Suzuki match. But even then, you've got the chair and stuff like that. But really, that sort of thing, 15 matches of that out of 35, Strig? Like, how can you like it, I feel like? And I guess that's really just a question for you, personally. Neither positive nor negative, again, but what about it makes you sing 15 of 35 matches with this garbage that you like?
We made the point, and that's what I just said. When we get to night 19, and every single Tamatonga match or Bad Luck Fale adds, a match ends this way, that's way over the top, just as we talked about Kenny Omega being way over the top. Still, you can't do it in a way, and some kind of nonsense, of course, makes sense, but if we get to night 19, this will be very, very tiring, of course.
I think it's already ran its course, would be my counter-argument to that. I think it ran its course probably 3 or 4 days ago in the G1, but I don't know really where it's going with this. Do you think that Omega and Tonga, back to my original point that started all of this, do you think that they changed their mind on Tonga winning? Or do you think that it's possible that that show in September that's going to be back in America has this match pegged as a main event for it?
That's a very interesting question. I thought going in we would get Kenny and Tamatonga out of it with Tamatonga winning. Maybe they changed their minds because they are going with the DQs now, but they also did the DQ with Fale on the first day. So that's not that can't be something that they changed their mind about. I think that this plan was laid out all along.
Yeah, I think so too. But what do you think that he'll? So you think they'll get the main event? September for Tonga versus Omega for the title.
That would be a big stretch. But you can still say it that Kenny Omega says I'm putting my belt on the line because we hit these shenanigans and I don't want to do it this way. I want to beat Taima Tonga clean in the middle. You can still say that, but it would be a stretch.
Well, if that happens, I think there may be it may be another half-empty house that Omega draws if they decide to be, if they are truly bold enough. To me, Tonga doesn't even have any credibility right now, you know, with these crazy matches. And there's another thing that I really, really don't like about these matches, is that in this match, there's a perfect example of Omega and Tonga. Attacks Red Shoes for the DQ in this tournament built around winning and scoring points. If you're going to cheat, that I already won't like it. I will admit fully, there's no way I'd give that a pass. If you're going to do all of these 15 run-ins and all of that. But I think at least trying to win has some semblance of sense to it.
Yeah.
Just attacking the referee is just what? Like, to me, that's just... That, to me, reeks of a cheap finish and lazy book.
That's... I made the point earlier. It's for them. Of course, I can see your point as well. And in an overall grand scheme of things, of course, in pro wrestling, it should be about winning. But in this storyline, it's just not about winning. These guys are not out to win. As I mentioned, they are to ruin everything, and that's what they are doing, and that's why they don't care about winning or losing.
Then why are they in this tournament?
Because New Japan put them in the tournament.
Could we not do the same storyline with them wrecking everything?
Sure, it would be more effective, you know. I think.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm just explaining. I'm not saying I'm a 100% fan of it. I'm just explaining and saying what I like about it and what I dislike about it.
And that's completely fine. I'm not saying... I think you're correct that they did do that. New Japan did put them there. But I think it would be better if they did it another way. But I still don't think that there's any way this would be any kind of good thing to me. Anyway, I don't like how this has been executed at all. A bad storyline executed poorly would be how I describe what they're doing right now. And I thought this was definitely the low point. It'll be hard to imagine something being worse than this. That is the good news. It'll be hard for them
Dylan,
to beat this.
For you, there will be a low point for sure because Taima Tonga still faces Toru Yano. But that will probably be my favorite match of the tournament.
No, Yano, that match will probably be better.
No, it will be better because Yano and Tonga, they have good chemistry, much like Tonga and Sanada do.
I don't know. Okay, I think I'm the only one thinking that. Were you rigging those polls, Striga, to rate these matches higher?
Of course, that's what I always do. Matches?
I knew it. I knew it. You dastardly
always
person.
Do.
That's why you're fake. You're a secret member. Fire Squad. No honor.
I have my 500 cage match accounts, and I have nothing else to do but to write reviews and give star ratings. That's what my life is all about.
That's what it's all about for you, Striga. It's not about anyone but the star ratings.
It's all about the stars. How many stars, Dylan, did you give for the main event of Tomohiro Ishii and Hiroki Goto? Please say all the stars.
5 million. That's how I gave it.
That's all of them, I think.
Yeah. I gave this match 4.75 stars. I think it will be very high on my match of the year ratings.
Yes. So right now, it's the highest rated match of the entire tournament so far, and deservingly so, I think. They just went all out. It was an amazing spectacle. We have it at 9.72 right now in cage match. And what I especially liked about this, that put it over the top for me, was after the match, we had these backstage comments. We always have them from the winners after the matches of the G1 tournament. But this one, for this match, we didn't have any comments because both Tomohiro Ishii and Hiroki Goto were just carried backstage and were totally lifeless and unable to speak.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I love it. This match, man, I thought this was everything I love about wrestling, and especially these two guys. I think both of these guys are clearly two of the best in the company, and they showed it here again. I have to agree, the cage match users whoever did it, whether they're Bullet Club fans, New Japan fans, hate Tama Tonga, whatever. you have to give this match props. The cage match usually got it right for sure. And I would say this has definitely been the match of the tournament, hands down. But really, when you look at this match here, compare this to Ishii's match with Naito. Because I think this is another match you could say, these guys have wrestled a ton of times. And even last year, their match was really good, but didn't leave an impression because they've had so many of these same kind of matches. But here it felt like they really hit a fifth gear in their own program and had one of the best matches these two have ever had against each other, yes. I feel like. There's so much, not just the heavy hitting. You know these guys hit hard. They're going to do those things in these matches. But I thought the fire for both men got the crowd so invested in this match. These guys were both really over to this crowd. And I think the crowd was just loved this match and loved what they were seeing,
you know,
more than anything.
It was just a perfect match at the perfect place. This was a perfect match to main event Currican Hall. And you mentioned it, the fire in both guys' eyes was great, and especially the again, much like in the Naito match, the defiance that Tomohiro Ishii showed. He was not going down. And he was even reversing Hiroki Goto's headbutts to the point until he was able to defeat him with the vertical drop brainbuster, which was an amazing finish too.
And yeah, I loved the spot where Ishii hit a big lariat and Goto was... Yeah, yeah. I mean, these guys were just so on point. And you gotta love when Goto hit the Shotenkai. That felt like a huge turning point, even though it was near the end of the match. It felt like this match was still getting in gear. And another point I want to bring up about this match, and again, I feel like I'm repeating myself and we're mentioning points again, 18 minutes. This main event match,
yes.
They didn't go 25. They didn't try and do a bunch of bullcrap. They didn't try to extend the match artificially. This was exactly what they needed. There was no 7 minutes extra or anything like that. The story was perfect for the time they wrestled. And I thought everything about this match was pretty much perfect, to be honest with you. Between these two, I think both these two should be very high in everyone's rankings for MVP at this moment. But what they're doing right now is just, they're elevating the standard of an already amazing block, historically.
It's incredible, it's amazing. Right now. Yeah.
Yeah, like Goto to me is rewriting the book on any detractors he may have in these first three matches. I think he's, maybe just me, I think you could really go for anybody depending on your personal preference. Like I said, some people are Naito fans. You know, they love those matches the most. I'm sure there are some people that liked Naito versus Juice the best out of this show, and I'm sure there's some fans that even liked Omega and Tonga the best. But I think if you really look at Goto as a Goto and Ishii as a pure wrestling match, this tournament, I can't see how anybody tops this match, because this was just one of the best matches of the year. I think this might have even been better than Goto and Suzuki. I loved it that much.
See,
very high up.
I was just going to say, there will of course be people who say it's not possible to top Naito and Ishii, or it's not possible to top Naito and Omega. And now you're saying it's impossible, or it's maybe impossible to top Goto and Ishii. It's so...
Never impossible.
It's, yeah, right. But the point is, it is so versatile. This tournament has something for everybody. If you like the hard-hitting, this one was the match for you. If you like hold-for-hold wrestling, probably Zack Sabre versus Zanada was your favorite match of this show. There is something for everybody in this tournament, and that's great.
I completely agree with you on that point, for sure. And I have to say, I thought this was, despite having my least favorite match in it, even despite that, I thought this was the best show of the tournament so far. Those three matches, especially Zack and Sanada and Goto and Ishii, to me, were just... I think those might be my two favorite matches of this whole tournament. But especially Goto and Ishii. Just really strong stuff.
Yeah. Definitely. And this brings us to the show from the Esforta Arena Hachioji today. As I mentioned already, 4,000 fans, more than 4,000 actually, 4,400 almost. And before we go into G1 matches actually, Dylan, I want to make a point about the undercard, because I thought there was a very interesting comment made by Sho. Sho was teaming with Yoshihashi on the show on Saturday. And after the match, he said, well, it's their task, it's their job to support their mentors, their senpais, he said. But the senpai he was in his match on Saturday was Yoshihashi. And then Sho just laughed and said, yeah, I'm fighting for myself. So they are creating kind of storyline within Chaos here. And also on this show today, we had Roppongi 3K again in two different matches, and both guys won their matches. Sho pinned Taka. Oh no, Sho made Taka tap out, actually, which is funny because Taka always says just tap out when opponents of Zack Sabre come out. And also Yo beat Ghetto with the 5-star clutch. So interesting here on the undercards. I also liked Naito and Sanada against Kota Ibushi and Yujiro Takahashi. Was a good match. And then we had Yoshihashi against Michael Elgin. Big props here again to Michael Elgin, because there again was some stuff from Yoshihashi in this match that didn't look good at all. And thing is, people were into the match because Yoshihashi showed some great fighting spirit in this match. But he is not, he's not drawing fans in emotionally with his wrestling, unlike for example Sanada and Zack Sabre do. Yoshihashi here is out. He does moves. He is fiery. That's good. But he's also very sloppy.
Yeah, I can definitely see where you're coming from on that point. You know, Hashi, I really always thought that, I think that almost kind of helps him in a way. I've always kind of thought that, because I think that benefits him, and I've always said that. I said that on my solo show before the tournament. I think him having a crappy look is how it should be. Like, he should be this underdog, you know, almost do-it-yourself, kind of not that talented, but gets by on heart.
Yeah.
Like, that should be his character.
See, it's the opposite from Sanada. Sanada looks almost too crisp, and Yoshihashi has this weird look, and he moves weirdly.
Exactly, and I think the reason why, it remains to be seen. I thought this was by far the best match on the show, even though you can say that about Yoshihashi being sloppy. I really like this match. Again, Elgin, to me, has been MVP of A block, whatever you want to say about it. I think he's really carried this whole block. And honestly, Yoshihashi has at least tried hard. I think he's had some weak moments the last couple of matches, but still, in A block, I'd rather watch him than a lot of these other guys. And that's really because of the storyline more than wrestling, more than anything. But I've always liked Hashi being kind of sloppy like that and having a crappy look, because I think it helps him feel like that he's not a carbon copy robot wrestler, you know, that I feel like happens a lot. And I feel like his style is not house style on New Japan. We kind of saw this argument take place a lot. Remember when Hiromu's injury happened? Everybody's talking about, oh, how dangerous New Japan style is. But actually, Hiromu and Dragon Lee don't really work New Japan style. Like, I feel like. And I think that's great when you have workers like those guys. Never mind the injury, but workers like them doing a different style. Yoshihashi has his own style. It may not be perfect, but I still think it benefits him. And I think he did a lot of things right in this match, too. I love some of his cradles, and I think when he came back and hit, one of his best spots to me is his lariat that he comes in that's almost out of nowhere all the time. His trick to it is that he hits lariat and raises his arm up as high as it can. Check that out, because that's really what makes it look more impactful. But I thought Elgin really did a great job here. He was definitely the better of the two in the match, but I thought Yoshi filled his spot well. My problem with this is, kind of like I said about White with Juice before the tournament, is that I think that's a very unique situation that couldn't really carry over. And the fans were behind Yoshihashi. I think, like, this is not me making a definitive statement, but I think in my heart that they did that because they believed he could win this match because he was facing a foreigner who could lose. Will they be behind him against Okada and Tanahashi? Will they believe he has a chance to win? That remains to be seen. And I'm kind
remains
of
to be seen, but more now than before, because now he at least has won a match.
Yeah, that is true. That is better than nothing. I will say that. I was happy he won. I thought the finishing stretch was really good, and I thought this was the best match of the show,
okay,
for sure. I have to say. Yeah.
Okay. We talked about Evil and Bad Luck Fale already. Minoru Suzuki beat Jay White in 10:35 with the Gotch style pile driver and a great finish, I thought. Jay White was about to give Minoru Suzuki a low blow, but of course, Minoru Suzuki knows every dirty trick in the book, much like Ric Flair did in his prime. He was able to counter the low blow into a Gotch style pile driver. That looked so amazing. And I don't think it hurt Jay White at all, because Minoru Suzuki for decades has been this incredible evil genius, and Jay White is only learning. He's learning on the job. So Minoru Suzuki being the master in this match didn't hurt Jay White at all, in my opinion. But it made for a great match. Beforehand, he said he's going to fucking kill Jay White. And he tried to.
Awesome.
He tried to. He even got out of the Indian deathlock by threatening to break Jay White's fingers. That was a great spot as well. So, again, one of those shorter matches, but I absolutely liked it.
Didn't he say something like, I'll stab him in the head or something?
Yeah.
That was awesome. The Nature Boy, Minoru Suzuki, we saw in this match. I thought it was a pretty decent match. I really thought all three of these last three matches were pretty good.
Yep.
But the match we had, like you mentioned, the low blow getting blocked and then the Gotch pile driver. I really liked what they did here. It's hard for me to have an opinion here because I thought it was a really solid match, but nothing spectacular.
No,
really.
Just a good match. And,
I was just
into the story they told you.
Yeah, that's fine. I can see people actually liking this more than me. That's more of a me thing than anything. But I didn't think it was bad at all. I actually rated all three matches the same in my PTR ratings. So all solid, but unspectacular. And but I thought they did a good job with the story they were telling. And I thought Suzuki and White do have good chemistry together. And I think if they had like a real big match, they could do something even better.
There will be another match down the line for sure after this one.
Yeah.
Interesting here, Jay White, of course, he beat Okada and Tanahashi, but now Minoru Suzuki has the tiebreaker over Jay White. That's going to be interesting later on when we go to the final days of G1 Climax Action in Block A. But before, Tanahashi is at 6 points now. He beat Hangman Page. We talked about Hangman Page's coming out party for the last two shows. Kind of stopped here. It was a good match. They followed a storyline, in many ways a very classic Hiroshi Tanahashi storyline, with both guys going for each other's legs. I liked about it that Hangman Page, before the match, he said that he noticed Tanahashi limping, but he didn't want to exploit the leg injury. But then in the match, Tanahashi and Hangman Page were both holding the leg of the other one. And Tanahashi said, drop the leg. We dropped the leg on three, and Page did, and Tanahashi didn't, and he did the dragon screw, which then led to Page going for
Dick.
The leg.
Yeah.
That was good.
I like that spot. That was awesome. I thought there were some fun spots in this match. The worst, though, was when Page broke the air guitar. Tanahashi offered. I think that's what led to that, really. He would have let it go if Paige had played the air guitar. That's my prediction on that one. But I thought it was honestly another solid match. Yep. I thought nothing to really write home about or anything. I thought too that I really think that these two, if they had a big match down the line at some point, they could do something really good, because I thought they had some good chemistry with each other and had some fun spots in this match. The crowd was into it. Liked what they did. I graded it the same as White and Suzuki, and both of them, I kind of feel like they have something better up their sleeves if they had a real strong match. But I thought they were just kind of, I don't want to say dogging it, but I thought that this wasn't their best.
No, but again, just with...
But they did good.
As with Suzuki and Jay White, there's still time left down the line for them to have another one, a better one, and a one with a... better told story, so to speak, because some of the legwork didn't really translate to the action inside the ring, but it's still fine.
True.
It was a 12-minute match, and you don't have to sell a leg injury in 12 minutes. That's totally fine.
Fine match. Again, I think that's the best way to say
it. Right. Main event. Looking forward to this one, actually. The Rainmaker! Katsushika Okada beat Togi Makabe in 15 minutes with the Rainmaker.
I can't believe it.
Dylan.
He's back. Yeah?
He's back. Even though he brought out the balloons, he wrestled a Katsushika Okada match.
I'm saying, Stringer. Like I said, I'm glad you see me on Twitter making these points, and I'm glad we agree. Okada, I hate this. I hate this gimmick so much. Not just because of the arguments it brought forth, because I don't mind talking about these things, but when you see Okada come out with these balloons, it feels like he should be a member of Retails or something. You know, he's half a step away from Yohei level. So when I come out, I want to see him wrestle a crazy style of match or something that we've never seen before from him. And he can do it. He wrestled a different style very early in his career. He has the lucha training. If he wanted to really get wacky in his matches, I feel like he could do it, you know. But instead, we get these same kind of matches. And in this match, it really felt like, I don't know how you felt about this, Striga, but did it seem to you like these guys were blown up, like, almost halfway through this match? Because it felt like there was just a lack of energy between mm-hmm. both involved in this match.
Thing is, Togi Makabe called this his third hometown, because he's originally from Nagamihara, and the G1 used to run in Machida the last 2 years, which is very close to Nagamihara, and Hachiochi is also very close to Nagamihara, so this is his third hometown now. And for a hometown guy, there was not much energy with Togi Makabe, but the problem here was that they didn't let him, because Katsushika Okada had his number. For everything Makabe did, Okada had a counter. And so there was not much energy to
but
get
look
behind.
At that. Look at that strike exchange they had. It was shortly after, I think, the reverse neckbreaker and the John Woo dropkick.
Yeah.
They had this strike exchange where it felt like they were both running out of gas. And that was like 7 or 8 minutes in, it felt mm-hmm. like. And I was really surprised to see that part. But besides that, it really was the same kind of thing for the tombstone. They went with the Rainmaker counters. He kind of made one into his Death Valley Driver.
He also did a rolling Rainmaker. I don't think that I've ever seen that.
Yeah, the rolling lariat. That was pretty cool. But besides that, it really was kind of the same. Makabe went up top. He got hit with a drop kick on the way down. So Okada's got the drop kick. Mm-hmm. He's got the tombstone. He's got the Rainmaker, which they teased a bunch of times. He did use the rolling lariat, which was a new move he's had, so that's cool. But I just think there's so much more you could do and that would make this worthwhile, because right now it just seems like... Okay, I'll give you an example. Because a lot of people used to say... Remember how, because you started out, we know we were used to be big fans of Dragon Gate, right? For a long time, people used to say Shingo was way different than everyone on Dragon Gate.
Mm-hmm.
And he was, stylistically. But psychology-wise, he still had the same problems as all of those other guys, but just did it in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, he grew and became much better after he turned heel and became a much better worker. And here, I see a lot of people saying Okada is this wildly different performer, but it's only skin deep. If you look at how he wrestles, he's still that same guy. And that's how I felt about it on Twitter. I don't see really any significant difference in his matches now. And even the story they were telling about the losses, if you look at those losses, they were by a cheap finish. And they were both by cheap finishes, in fact. So I don't really see what would be any different if he were just himself, based on his matches. I think really, if he were just the same guy, all of these matches would have happened as they happened in this match. Only maybe he wouldn't do the spinning clothesline. that's the only difference right now.
Yeah,
but I think it could be a lot better.
We brought up the point of Okada redemption stories, and if that's it, that's not a very good redemption story.
And that's another point.
He's
right there.
He's facing Yoshihashi next up.
Yoshihashi. This is now. What did I just say at the start of this A Block show?
Yeah.
Will the fans be behind Yoshihashi? Probably not, because they all know that Okada is going to win that match. I know it. You know it. And it feels to me like there's no chance that Okada loses any of his other matches until he gets to Tanahashi. Like that will be his next interesting match. And I feel like this is another G1 where Okada is just kind of going through it right now, because I don't really sense any significant difference in him, and I don't think his matches have lit the world on fire by any means, but much like the rest of this block. So
when I'm looking
if he just
when I'm looking at the pick'ems, sorry, it's the way I have laid it out as well, but I thought he would lose to Togi Makabe here. I have him winning every match up until the Tanahashi one, but my man Flosh, he has some trust in Okada's opponents, and he picked Elgin and Evil to beat Okada. And my pick was, that was why I thought he would lose to Makabe, because I was thinking he would be too arrogant here, and that's why I think I'm pointing this out on this show as well. I think that will be his downfall against Tanahashi.
They're not really showing any signs of that story in his matches, though,
He was very cocky against Makabe. He was smiling throughout the match, was laughing, but he was much better than Makabe. And maybe also age is creeping up to Makabe, because we had similar stuff with Hiroyoshi Tenzan in the last climaxes he was in. He started out great, and then he lost steam very quickly.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right on Makabe's point. I thought they had a cool little story earlier on with him, but they never really hit him on Honma. That's kind of where I wanted them to go, but they never really hit that. It was more, much like we said, if you follow the show, Striga always hits you with the backstage interviews where he mentioned he wanted to be a gatekeeper to these guys. And I think that's kind of a cool story too, but really, even in that storyline, he really serves no purpose against the main eventers then, if that's his goal, is to be the gatekeeper.
I was saying gatekeeper for the lack of a better term I didn't have, but because he also said he would make every champion better by facing them and also by...
Wait a minute, there were no champions in this block.
Yeah. In this block, but he was talking in general.
Just in general, yes. Okay. I feel you on that one. But yeah, Makabe, I just think he's going to fade into the background. I don't think he's really any kind of player or anyone to look at. Although
he's
probably going to
pick up two more wins here, finish at 8.
Yeah, that would be fine. I like his tournament so far, though. I think he's done a pretty good job, all things considered. Okada, and some people were saying on Twitter, too, that some people are saying that he's wildly different, and some people are saying that he shouldn't change. And that I'm wrong for saying that. My counter to that is, that's great, but then don't do this storyline where the point is that he's changed, if that's going to be it. You don't have to do that. My idea, if I were in charge of New Japan and running Okada's character, I think this is a wildly different storyline. I don't even want to get into fantasy booking, because I don't know how many people like that sometimes, but my idea for him when he lost the title was that he would be, which would really actually fit into your narrative a lot better. I think a great idea for him would be that he is so overconfident and delusional. He never even lost the title. All of his promos would be running down all the people he beat. He's the greatest of all time. Mm-hmm. He has all the records. Omega cheated. You don't have to say he cheated, but say, Okada, I beat you first in that match, you know? I beat you first, Omega. You had to have these special rules to take my title, and it's going to end very soon. Nobody can beat me. I'm the greatest, blah, blah, blah. Nobody's on his level. That's kind of that's Gato's catchphrase. And then you could have an underdog beat him, you know, like that, to really wreck his run. And I think that would help. That would be a lot more interesting than what this is doing, because, like you said, if he just comes back and wins all of his matches, then... You know, I feel like that's a drop ball in a lot of ways. And it'll be hard to really, if he puts that, let's just say he goes back and puts that robe back on versus Tanahashi. You can't really go back to the same storyline again. You know, it's just over. And then where do you go with him? He's just the same guy. Mm-hmm. And nothing really came of it. So I think there was a lot they could have done better with this storyline overall.
Oh, definitely. Yes. Yes, definitely. That's why I was so hyped up about talking about this match with you, because... just like you, I saw a regular Okada match, and he won. And
he won.
He has his balloons now, but except for that, it's Okada.
Do you think there's any chance of any of these other people beating him besides Tanahashi? Like my man Flash says, who I love to do.
I still think there's a chance that it might turn out the way that you say, or that you fantasy booked it, that he doesn't take Yoshihashi seriously at all. That's still possible, I think.
That would be my guy. He would have gone undefeated, and then... And that's another thing about the last show, too. He could have lost to Yoshihashi, and when he lost, he could have snapped and beat the hell out of his longtime friend.
Yeah.
And kicked chaos right there. I mean, it's Yoshihashi. Like, you know, it doesn't really matter. But that could set up a new deal because they really haven't teamed a lot. They haven't really had Ride the Lightning in a while. And attacking Yoshihashi would be kind of a total dick move. Mm-hmm. Your longtime friend gets his one moment after all of these years. The entire storyline of Yoshihashi G1 is that he really kind of doesn't belong, and a lot of people don't think he does. So to have him beat Okada would be a huge win for him, and it would continue Okada's storyline. I also think that the last match versus Tanahashi would have, and I kind of mentioned this during my solo show again, I'm plugging that show, I'm so proud of it, obviously. But I'm proud of all of our shows, actually. But I think the last match versus Tanahashi would have been much more interesting if we had a situation where White needed Okada to lose going into it. Like, he needed Tanahashi to win to move on, because I think then you could do something where White... Chaos always supports their boys, but White might try to interfere against Okada, and that sets off their storyline more than anything, or really takes their storyline to the next level. But now, White's got the advantage over both guys. So that's really the one interesting kind of storyline in A-Block thus far, is what White does, because I think he's the one that is going to have to lose some matches to even that up, so to speak.
Even if he moves on. Losing today.
Yeah, exactly. I think he's going to have to lose one or two more before that night to really bring it in.
Yep. So it's very interesting right now, even though Okada is back to his usual self, these tiebreaker situations in Block A are very interesting, and... at least we got some good matches out of this show. I think Tanahashi and Hangman might be my favorite match of this show.
Wow!
Slightly above Yoshihashi and Elgin, because there were these moments with Yoshihashi I didn't really like.
I really love that match with Hachi and Elgin.
Still up to anyone to make the call here on this show. I even saw some people saying that Okada and Makabe was the best match, and that's fine as well. Liked White and Suzuki too, but definitely from the show on Saturday, it has to be either Goto and Ishii or Zanada and Zack Sabre. Depends on what you prefer.
Yeah, I think B Block is just destroying A Block in terms of quality right now. I have to say, A Block, I think there are some interesting stories if you're into them. If you're not as against this whole Switchblade stuff as I am, I think he's very easy to enjoy. I think he's so charismatic and such a good character worker that
definitely
you can really get into him. And this match against Suzuki was like, okay, even if I rated this the same, I think it was more fun to watch than the other two matches. Kind of.
I can see that.
I think that was the most fun match to watch to me. Even though I thought Elgin versus Yoshihashi was a really good match, I could definitely see people liking that match the best, or Tanahashi and Hangman. I thought they were all pretty good overall, and I've started to really count up everybody's ratings and things of that nature and trying to get them together and see who's really having the best tournament. I don't think it's fair to go the full PTR route yet because there's just so much left to go and so many things left to do on that end. But I think in A Block, you have to really give Elgin the props because we're over a third of the way through this tournament already. It's hard to believe, but we're already there already. I think Elgin's been the best guy in A Block, and I really love what Goto's done in B Block. I think he's had a spectacular tournament. And Elgin, he's really made the best of his block, because I think that a lot of guys right now are doing good little matches, but compared to B Block, it's a real big difference. I have to say, really, any of B Block shows, I can't imagine. And I have to go back to the last show we did where you picked Zach and Yano over all the A Block matches.
Yes,
that to me totally
again,
justifies.
Dylan, going back to that, we talked about two shows, and I was just picking my two favorite matches. But that's saying a lot.
That's saying a lot. That's saying a lot right there. Because to me, that just says that whatever the best match was on A Block would have been the fifth best match at best on that B Block show. So that to me just totally justified. I'll remember that. And honestly, too, I have to call you out on that, because that might have been one of Hangman Page's best matches in New Japan. And for all the talk, you couldn't pick it over Yano and Zach.
No, I couldn't. I couldn't. No, because I enjoyed Yano and Zack Sabre much, much more.
I'm not criticizing you for that. I just want you to remember that the next time you say that I'm missing this big prospect. I want you to remember that. Okay? And I liked his match here. I've liked his tournament so far. It's not been like great in terms of ratings, but I thought he's done a good job for what he's done. Hangman, that is.
Yeah, I know. Going into questions, we still have two questions left from our second last show, actually, from the user Redat8888. First question he had was, would love to hear what match has surprised you the most this far. Personally love the Ishii Yano bout. I think that was a very big surprise. But I gotta go back to Zack and Yano. I was expecting it to be good, but I didn't expect it to be that great and that entertaining.
I think the very first match was Yoshihashi and Makabe. Because I think Makabe's had a way better tournament than expected. And Yoshihashi's been up and down, but I still rate him pretty highly, especially in A block. But that match, to me, was a great start to the tournament. It's something really over-delivered on my expectations from a Makabe match.
Yeah, definitely. And then he asks, what language commentary do you watch the events in? I feel like I miss out on important info by listening to the Japanese instead of English, but it just pulls me out of the action sometimes. I try to alternate between the two. Every other day I try to watch in English. Sometimes I watch the undercards in English and then the climax matches in Japanese. And to the point that it pulls you out of the action sometimes, I think Kevin Kelly is doing a great job right now because, for example, when he calls the Destino, it is very similar to how the Japanese announcers call the Destino. And, and he really gets the emotion into these finishing stretches. So I think the English commentary team is doing a very good job. It's by far the best English commentary team we have had yet in for Japanese wrestling.
I think Rocky does a great job.
Yeah.
English commentary. He's my favorite of everybody that they have on there. Kevin does a good job too. Some parts with Don Callis, his character work, I can definitely feel what my man's saying on Twitter, because that really takes it out for me too. Yeah. And sometimes they just go a little overboard, in particular with Omega. I have to say, I don't really like them that much together, actually. I would rather watch the Japanese commentary when they're doing it, but I have made a point for this G1, and I thought they've done a pretty good job, I have to say. I've really liked what I've heard so far with these guys. And there are at times where Callis, Kelly, and Rocky can really do a great job and add to a match too. So I think it's worth checking out this Kelly and Rocky team they have going on, because you don't have any of the character work really. Except when Jay White matches are on, Rocky plays more of a character against Jay White.
Yeah.
But besides that, I think he does a great job. And I think he's improved a lot, because if you remember his first time when they had the three-man booth, it was awesome but bad, because he said some stuff that you're not supposed to say when it comes to certain things in terms of kayfabe. But now he's totally on point. I think he does a great job, and he's almost like a real sports commentator, I think. Yeah. Rocky does. I think he's totally got it, and a good one too, not like, you know, one of these guys you see, maybe if you watch Premier League or World Cup, you see one of these guys on BBC that totally suck. This is like a really good sports commentator on there, so I really like them, but I'm with you. I kind of like the Japanese better, too, if I have a choice. But I do think that you can gain something from the English commentary in a lot of ways.
You can, totally. And I also hope that you, the listeners, you gained something from this show here. As we mentioned, there are three off days now. The G1 Climax returns on Thursday, July 26th. Up until then, I hope we all are able to catch a breath of fresh air to really get back in G1 mood. Because, Dylan, I really think that these breaks we get in between keep it very fresh, keep the tournament matches very fresh, and hopefully also keep the athletes very fresh.
I think this is the best way of their current format when it comes to it. I think this is the best way they can schedule.
Yeah,
I think with the on again, off again type of things, I think it's really good for everybody involved, but especially the fans. I think this is one that, even with the quality being a mixed bag, some super great and some not so super great, I think that it's easier to get invested in this tournament. This tournament than some other ones because of the scheduling differences. And I think we haven't seen that since they really did the all G1 matches shows, which I think those were definitely the easiest to get get into as a fan, but they don't make as much money running 10 shows as 19.
Right.
So I think how they do it now is really good, though, for their format. I think it's really helped a lot of people.
Yep. So that's it for our show today. Thank you for listening, and goodbye.
Sayonara.
Worldwide. This is the MLWRadio.com network.